just when you thought it could not possibly get any worse, here's little Nick Hogan, the little bitch that he is, squealing and complaining about the conditions inside the facility. Take a listen.
I don't know, like, if you could call the judge or something, just please ask him to put me on house arrest just so I can get out of here, because this is the only place I can be is in here.
I don't want to be in jail anymore. Shut the hell up. Thank God I've never had anybody break into my house before, and I hope I never do. But Triple H has got to be the nicest burglar I've ever heard or seen in my life. You'll notice that how he rang the doorbell to alert them before he actually took a sledgehammer and caved in their front door. I don't know about you. I don't know anybody that's ever broken into anyone's house before that first rings the doorbell. What the hell is Randy Orton doing with all these people in his house at 11 o'clock on a Monday night? I mean, does the guy run a brothel? I know that times are tough with the economy. Maybe he's renting rooms out to people. There were a shitload of people in that house for 11 o'clock at night. You can't tell me that all those people were part of the TV crew. I mean, there was a woman in the friggin' laundry room, for crying out loud. What the hell is she doing there? As a wrestling show, it was fucking terrible. A 1 out of 10. The best botch that I was referring to a moment ago came when Piven was in the ring with The Miz and John Cena. Of course, John Cena comes out and continues to bury The Miz. They all bury The Miz. Nobody likes The Miz. They don't take him seriously. Why are you putting me in a match against him again? Blah, 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 blah. And basically, Piven comes back and says, you know, to up the ante a little bit in this match, so it's not just another Cena versus Miz match, we're going to say that if The Miz can't beat John Cena, that not only would he be banned from the Staples Center, which I guess, for whatever reason, is very upsetting to The Miz because he comes from L.A., and the Staples Center is the big arena in L.A., and how can you ban The Miz from the Staples Center? Okay. And not only would The Miz be banned, and this was a direct quote from Jeremy Piven, he would be banned from Raw for all eternity. Mark that one down, folks. For all of eternity. Not only that, but The Miz would be banned from the Summerfest. Going to the pay window. Maybe he'll wine and dine with kings and queens, pork and beans, and all that bullshit. Seated next to us was an older man, an older woman, and apparently their mother. We'll call her Granny. Granny could not have been under 75 years old. Granny was just so into the action. You've never seen a grandmother into the action on Monday Night Raw as much as you've seen with this woman. She had the John Cena You Can't See Me headband wrapped around her head. I was so concerned that it was squeezing her brains. She had a sign. In fact, she had multiple signs that she brought to the show. It would have sucked to be sitting behind her because she just did not give a shit about the people sitting behind her. Every 5 seconds, up with the sign, up with the sign. I thought Granny was going to be tossed off the mezzanine section down below, and that would have been entertaining. Here's what I hope is not the case. I don't want this to be kind of the genesis of another Undertaker-Kane feud. First of all, it would be far too predictable, because this is pro wrestling. So, of course, Kane comes out, he's emotional, he's angry, he's going to find out who did it. Pro wrestling one-on-one typically would dictate that would mean Kane himself is the culprit. I hope that's not the case. I don't want to see Kane and The Undertaker again. We've seen it more than enough times. We don't need to see it again. The show itself, in my opinion, overall, top to bottom, start to finish, was, again, in my opinion, a pile of shit.
American Dream. He's just a common man, working hard with his hands. He's just a common man, working hard for a man. Hey, he's a American dream. Hey, he's a American dream.
Welcome to a special edition of The Sound Off, episode 133, 3-year anniversary edition of The Sound Off. It is Sunday, November 7th, 2010, and indeed, it was 3 years ago this weekend that the very first Sound Off went up on SEScoops.com, and here we are 3 years later, and I guess it's true what they say, time flies when you're having fun. Got to thank Webmaster Mike, of course, for the platform to make this possible. It started as a favor a couple of years ago, and it's turned into a labor of love. So, here you go. 3 years of the Sound Off. Hard to believe. Hopefully, here's the three more, and many more beyond that. Thank you, as always, for downloading. I know a lot of you guys have been listening from the very first episode. Some of you have only been listening for maybe 2 weeks. I love you all just the same because you guys download this show every week and make this all possible. So, thumbs up to each and every one of you guys. So, we got a whole bunch of stuff to get to here this week, including a startling revelation here as far as the best wrestling show on TV last week. It was not what you might think. And anybody who disagrees with me, I will vehemently oppose your point of view, because there was only one truly enjoyable wrestling show on TV, and it wasn't even on TV last week. We're going to get to that a little bit later. But first, I would be remiss if I did not start out with Linda McMahon losing her Senate bid in her battle with Richard Blumenthal in the state of Connecticut. What a race it has been. You can tell by my level of enthusiasm here how excited I was about this race. I was actually more excited to see it end. And it ended pretty much the way that we all figured it would. Linda lost. She did close the gap a little bit there at the end, I will say. I think she only lost by about 10 percentage points or so. But a loss is a loss is a loss. It doesn't matter how many points. And Dick Blumenthal is going to Washington as senator for the state of Connecticut. And Linda McMahon gets to go home. So the big question is, now what? Everyone speculating if she'll go back to being the CEO of World Wrestling Entertainment. Is she going to pursue perhaps a different position in politics? Some believe perhaps that she may run for Joe Lieberman's Senate seat in 2012. Joe Lieberman, once upon a time, was an enemy of the state to WWE. He's been kind of quiet of late, but nobody knows exactly what Linda McMahon is going to do. Linda McMahon probably does not know what Linda McMahon is going to do. All I could say is this, and I think most of the people listening to this podcast are smart enough to understand this, but for those people out there who are not, and I don't mean that as a slight, but the fact is, all of this talk that, well, thank God Linda lost because now WWE can go back to pushing the envelope. You know, WWE can go back to being TV-14 and not PG programming anymore. Let me explain something to you guys. First of all, and I made this comment on one of the posts on SEScoops.com, because, of course, there are comment sections underneath each post, for those of you who did not know. We got into a lively debate, and I kind of made a post at one point in there pointing out to people who may have forgotten that before Linda announced her intention to run for senator of the state of Connecticut, there was a whole other controversy about Linda McMahon's appointment to the Connecticut State Board of Education. Linda had pursued a position on the board for reasons that I still am not exactly clear on, although perhaps her running for the Senate made that a little bit more clear, but there was a whole controversy. People on that board did not want her on there because of her background with WWE, and she had claimed, I think, that she had gotten some sort of degree that actually turned out to not be the case. So there's a shocking revelation for you, a wrestling executive who lies. But all of that stuff came long before she began running for senator. And when you're running, or not running so much, but trying to get on the board of education in the state of Connecticut, you kind of want to clean things up a little bit. So this whole PG thing goes back at least that far. This is not just about her running for the Senate. And she did get on the board, and then she had to relinquish that position when she decided to run for Senate. So anyway, the point is, people who think this whole PG push started when she started running are sadly mistaken. And if they think that just because she lost this race, that means the end of PG, you're going to be severely disappointed. Let us not forget that WWE has what I believe is a 5-year contract with the Mattel toy company. Now, this Mattel deal, WWE actually had an earnings report released this past week, and I'm not going to get into the boring numbers and all that, but the Mattel deal is one of the few positives that the company has going for it right now. I mean, that was a big, big deal for them. And they're already reaping the rewards. They're gonna be together for at least a few more years. And if all goes well, I could see them extending that relationship. That, as much as anything, has to do with the PG push. And that's not going away anytime soon. So again,
Let's put that to bed once and for all. The company, they did make a decision a couple of months ago, you know, earlier this year, that they were going to push the envelope a little bit more. I'm not quite sure what that means. I certainly have not seen it on their programming, unless they, you know, you want to count that first Nexus angle, which was pretty intense. But their idea of pushing the envelope in 2010 is not the same as pushing the envelope in 1999. So no matter how far they may want to push the envelope, don't expect a return to the so-called glory days, because it's not going to happen. So, and if I were a betting man, Linda McMahon's going to run again for something. She may run for Joe Lieberman's Senate seat in a couple of years. I mean, if she, hypothetically speaking, if she were to run for his seat in the 2012 election, that really would only give us about 6 to 9 months from this point on of kind of relaxation before, you know, the campaign season really kicks into high gear. So if she does run for that seat, it's going to be about 6 to 9 months of quiet, and then this shit's going to start all over again. So we'll see what happens there, but... yeah, no Linda McMahon on Capitol Hill, and Vince McMahon does not get to be the, well, I guess what, he would be the first lady, I guess. So, speaking of Vince McMahon, we may as well just get into Raw here. I got some Raw thoughts here. Vince McMahon, let's talk about the skit. A lot of opinion on this Vince McMahon skit from last Monday night, and I kind of fall into the category of, it was pretty fucking stupid, but... it was entertaining. So in other words, there wasn't much to like about Raw Monday night, and that at least put a stupid smile on my face because of just how stupid it was. So I didn't mind it. It was incredibly dumb, but I just took it for what it was. It didn't offend me. It didn't piss me off. I've seen far worse. And actually, you know, some of the comedy, for lack of a better word, in there was actually pretty funny, which is better than what I can say for most of their comedy efforts on most of their shows. You know, Vince McMahon is in a coma backstage. There's some continuity there for you, because I had completely forgotten that he had his ass handed to him by Nexus all those months ago. So even though we've seen him do those stand-up for WWE videos, and he's been campaigning for his wife, and he was just at the Fan Appreciation Day event the other day, I guess he's been in an on-and-off coma for a couple of months. Freddie Prinze Jr., who is once again working behind the scenes for WWE, he just came back to the company within the last couple of weeks. He plays the role of Doctor in this skit. He's never once acknowledged as far as who he is. And, you know, he's talking about how, you know, Linda McMahon is the only person who's bothered to visit her husband in all this time. And she spent $50 million on her campaign. And Vince pops up out of his coma and is alarmed by the fact that his wife has basically wasted $50 million of his money. I wonder if he woke up in a cold sweat like that when he realized he lost $58 million on the XFL. Anyway, well, it's kind of like Dixie Carter, though. I doubt that she ever wakes up in a cold sweat knowing that her company has lost $45 million up until this point, but we'll keep that a secret. Anyway, Vince is going on and on about, you know, wanting to know what's going on in WWE. He's been sleeping for a couple of months now, as most of his viewers have. And The Undertaker has been buried, Freddie Prinze tells him. And Pee Wee Herman is hosting Raw, and Vince made a crack about how, you know, soon you're going to tell me that Daniel Bryan is the U.S. champion, which I thought was funny. Some people were annoyed by that. Based on your emails, they thought he was burying Daniel Bryan. Anytime Daniel Bryan's name gets a mention in something like this, he's getting a push. I know the U.S. title means absolutely nothing, but he's the U.S. champ. He just beat Dolph Ziggler on TV 3 times in a row. He beat the Intercontinental Champion 3 times in a row on TV. He beat Ted DiBiase on Monday night, too. I would hardly call that a burial. So, good for him. I thought that was a funny line. And Vince, anyway, the whole point of this was Vince teased the fact that perhaps if his wife could run for Senate, then he could run for President of the United States, which is not going to happen, so don't worry about that. I think they've learned some valuable lessons from this. But Vince walks out at the end of the segment, and he's got this Dick Blumenthal banner on his ass, which I think he had to do that because by essentially campaigning for his wife, you know, at one point during the skit, you see all these Linda for Senate stickers on him, and I think in the interest of fairness by the election laws, he had to give equal time to Blumenthal, so that was a somewhat creative way to do that. Here's what struck me about this segment. First of all, my God, has Vince aged. He really has. It's quite sad. And what I find most sad, and I posted this on my Twitter, Vince McMahon's hair is just fucking awful. I mean, WrestleMania 23 truly was the end of an era. When Vince lost that pompadour and it got shaved off in that Battle of the Billionaires, he just... I mean, my guess is he was probably already losing hair, and once he got it shaved off, he was never really able to grow it back. But he's got that silly-looking part. I mean, look, people have parts in their hair. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that, but it doesn't work for Vince. He just doesn't look right with that hairdo. It's just, I don't know. He just doesn't look... He doesn't look like Vince McMahon to me. Pee Wee Herman apparently was a really big hit backstage. You know, you got a lot of wrestlers on that roster who are pretty much, you know, in that age group where they grew up at least aware of who he was. I'm not saying everybody backstage was a Pee Wee Herman fan growing up, but certainly they were all aware of who he was. You know, Pee Wee's Playhouse, Pee Wee's Big Adventure. You know, for the record, I never did watch the TV show, but I actually really like Pee Wee's Big Adventure as a movie. And when I was younger, that movie actually freaked me out. So I don't know what that says about me, but I have not gone back and watched that movie in the last couple of years, but I was a fan of that when I was younger. Anyway, he was a big hit for his segments on TV. All the guys in the back were gathered around the monitor, and the biggest Pee Wee Herman fan of all, who made a cameo on Raw Monday night, was former women's champion Lita, who was in the area for an autograph signing, knew that Pee Wee Herman would be at Raw. She is a humongous mark for Pee Wee Herman. Apparently, she has said that his movie is her favorite movie of all time. I would never, ever go that far. And they convinced her to do a cameo on camera, which she was literally on camera for all of 5 seconds. This does not mean that Lita is coming back. She could. I mean, WWE perhaps could convince her to come back for a brief run. I mean, I don't see her coming back full-time or anything like that. You know, they have a Raw Old School show coming up in a couple of weeks. Perhaps she could show up there. You know, maybe they could convince her to do some sort of program for WrestleMania, because they're really, really lacking in the WrestleMania star department right now. But for now, it was just a one-time-only appearance. It has nothing to do with the fact that Matt Hardy was let go a couple of weeks ago, and all of a sudden Lita comes back. I mean, Matt Hardy was on a different show, so I don't see what the fuck one has to do with the other. Although I did make a comment on Facebook that I'm sure when Matt Hardy saw that on Monday night, he was throwing furniture. And so, yeah, that was Raw Monday night. I don't remember much else about the show, because it was just not a great show. I just was not, I was not moved by Raw Monday night. Now, I did not see Impact, thank God, and I did not see SmackDown, unfortunately. I heard Impact was just a wretched show. I won't judge it because I didn't see it. I'm just saying people have said that it was a fucking terrible show. And in fact, you know, when I read the results and all that, the fact that they did not even officially announce what their pay-per-view main event was going to be until the very end of the show. And I believe Impact, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Impact went overtime, and as it sometimes does, bleeds into reaction. There are certain places internationally where if they don't get reaction, Impact kind of cuts off at a certain time and people miss the end of the show. So keep that in mind when you consider that TNA did not officially announce their Turning Point pay-per-view main event until the very end of the show, when potentially thousands of people were unable to see the end of the show. And that was the go-home show. They have a pay-per-view this weekend. So, way to go. SmackDown, like I said, I didn't see. However, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm going to say it. NXT was the best show on TV this week. If you are watching NXT for good wrestling, you will be disappointed. If you are watching NXT for great comedy, you will be disappointed. If you are watching NXT to see a train wreck, if you want to spend an hour essentially rubbernecking and watching comedy that is so bad it's good, NXT is the show for you. Maybe I just caught it on a good week. This was the big Goldust Oksana wedding. Now, for those of you who don't know, Oksana is the Lithuanian diva who has Goldust as her pro, and they've been doing the storyline for a couple of weeks where she is going to be deported, apparently. They found out that she's in this country illegally. They're threatening to deport her. Goldust suggests that they get married as a way around that, because if they get married, then they can't deport her. And she said yes, and this was the big wedding this week between Goldust and Oksana, and another diva elimination as well. So I believe it was Maxine who was eliminated this week, who just comes off as such a bitch. She's really good in that role. Caitlyn is just looking great as usual. AJ, you know, I've kind of come around on AJ. She's an incredibly cute character. And I think Caitlyn and AJ really... And Naomi is certainly athletic, but personality-wise, and certainly in the looks department, Caitlyn and AJ are I think, have great potential as divas on the active roster when this season is over. So, again, everything is kind of built around this wedding, and they have Cody Rhodes there, because, of course, Cody is Goldust's brother. So he's there, along with the American Dream. Dusty Rhodes on NXT this week. Just the fact that Dusty Rhodes is on NXT is all the reason you need to watch NXT. Don't worry about Raw. Don't worry about Impact. All of that is shit. When you've got Dusty Rhodes on NXT, you got to watch NXT for this. Dusty Rhodes comes out with Cody. They're Goldust's best men, I guess. I guess Goldust doesn't have any friends. So his father and his brother are his best men. Hornswoggle is there as the ring bearer. And Oksana comes out. She's looking quite gorgeous. And as the ceremony progresses and they each say their vows and all that jazz, the minister asks if there is anybody who objects to this, speak now or forever hold your peace. And nobody objects, shockingly enough. So then the minister says, well, if nobody else objects, I object. Which, of course, is shocking to Goldust. He can't believe what he's hearing here. And basically, the minister admits that he was paid off by Ted DiBiase, who then comes out with Maryse. And DiBiase says, listen, if you want to get married, if you want this thing to go through, all you got to do is give me back my million-dollar belt. Million-dollar title. Sorry, you're not allowed to say belt. So, and by the way, Goldust came out for his wedding with the million-dollar title draped over his shoulder, which I thought was great. I mean, who among us would not want to make their grand wedding entrance with a championship belt? So, DiBiase says, give me back my belt and I'll let you marry this gold digger. And Dusty Rhodes gets on the microphone. And this is just gold. So Dusty is being Dusty on the microphone. He says, I knew something like this was going to happen. And I had a contingency plan in place in the event that something like this happened. And he introduces a new minister to marry his son. And that new minister is none other than the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, who comes out. Now we've got Dusty Rhodes and the Million Dollar Man on the same show. So anybody who wants to debate me on this and say that NXT was not the best show on TV this week, and again, it wasn't even on TV technically, at least not in this country, you're dead wrong. So DiBiase comes out. His son can't believe what he's seeing. He asks him, Dad, why are you doing this? And Million Dollar Man's answer was kind of weak. He basically just said, I just wanted to do it to see the look on your face, son. Although I guess once upon a time, DiBiase Jr. did slap his father on television, so this was his revenge. So the Million Dollar Man proceeds to continue the ceremony, calls for the exchanging of the rings. He officially pronounces Goldust and Oksana man and wife. And as Goldust goes in for the kiss to kind of consummate things, Oksana slaps him across the face and is roundly booed as she leaves the ring with a smirk on her face. So apparently, she was, in fact, nothing more than a gold-digging bitch. She got what she wanted. She got married. She's legally in this country. She doesn't need this gold freak anymore. And that was it. That was the wedding right there. So you got to watch the entire segment in its totality to really appreciate it. The best part, perhaps, of the whole thing, besides Dusty and the Million Dollar Man, is Josh Matthews and Michael Cole on commentary, who are just, at least Cole, ragging on this entire thing. And the best part about this entire ordeal is, as Michael Cole, as the wedding is kind of getting underway, and Cole is actually glowing about it and being very sarcastic and speaking about what a wonderful occasion this is and what a big deal this is, Josh Matthews chimes in and basically says, you do know this is not real, right? This is a storyline. Awesome. Nobody watches this show anyway, so it's fine. I am going to try to make it a point to watch NXT again next week. I doubt that it could be nearly as good as what the show was this week, especially without Dusty and the Million Dollar Man. But this was just fucking great. There was no train wreck match like Caitlyn and I guess it was Maxine had the week before, which was good, so nobody got killed. But this was great stuff. This was extremely entertaining. I mean, there was actually another skit earlier in the show, another show-long storyline. Primo, who is AJ's pro, is clearly into her and just is just dying to bang this chick. And he's backstage with her, and she wants to tell him something, and they want some privacy, so they try to find a locker room where they can get a little bit of privacy. And the first time they open the door, they see Dusty. That was the first time we saw Dusty. He was there with the Bella twins, which just threw Michael Cole into a frenzy because supposedly the Bellas were his date for the wedding. And here's Dusty. And that reminds me, actually, during the wedding, before Goldust swooped in for the kiss on Oksana, it was actually Dusty who interfered and got a kiss before Goldust did, which was kind of funny. So, yeah, Dusty was great. Million Dollar Man was great. Cole and Matthews were great. This was a great fucking show. And for at least 1 week, I have come around on NXT. I take back everything I said about this show not being worth your time. For at least 1 week, it is absolutely worthwhile to go out of your way to watch this show. The whole thing is up on YouTube. I actually put a link. I replied to somebody in a post on Facebook. So it's on the official WWE Fan Nation channel on YouTube. You can find it. The full show is up there. Check it out. It is worth the effort. And it was easily the best wrestling show this week. So if you want your fix of sports entertainment, watch NXT. You won't regret it. Undertaker, depending on who you believe, has either had rotator cuff surgery already or will be having it very shortly. I believe he had the surgery this past week. His shoulder issue apparently was more serious than originally believed. And there is grave concern in the halls of Titan Tower right now that Undertaker may not be ready to come back at WrestleMania, which would be an utter disaster. Because even though Undertaker physically has really just taken a fucking nosedive over the last couple of months, even compared to a year ago, Taker just looks old. He just does not move well at all. I'm not even sure he'd be capable of having a match anymore, the likes of which he had with Shawn Michaels. But they're really hoping, it's going to come down to the wire with him, that Undertaker can physically do something, even if he's not at 100%, that he can do something at WrestleMania, because WrestleMania has become all about the streak. And when you really think about it, Chris Jericho is out. There's no guarantee that Jericho will be back in time for WrestleMania. He's got another Fozzy tour coming up around the same time. I fully believe Jericho will be back, but he may not be back for WrestleMania. You know, Batista is gone. Shawn Michaels ain't coming back. Triple H is still out, although he'll be back shortly, I'm sure, to continue his feud with Sheamus. Rey Mysterio is seemingly hurt every other month. They don't have a lot of depth at the top when it comes to WrestleMania. They tried to do something with Undertaker and Brock Lesnar, which, considering Undertaker's injury and the fact that he may not be back for the pay-per-view, imagine how much more of a disaster it would have been had that angle worked and had they signed Brock for a match with Taker and then Taker gets hurt. But regardless, the Brock Lesnar thing ain't going to happen. Dana White made that very clear. So they tried. WWE is trying to think outside the box. The Brock Lesnar idea, in theory, was a great idea. If they could have made it work, that would have been huge business for them, but it didn't work. So what do you do now? What other celebrity can you get? What other old wrestler from the past could you bring back? There's been a lot of rumors about Steve Austin, who has been saying never say never more often lately when people ask him that question about whether or not he'll wrestle one more match. He just did another interview this past week in promoting his new movie, Hunt to Kill, with the Slam Wrestling website, and basically said, he was a little more clear in his answer. He said, basically, he's not coming back. So, again, never say never, but it seems pretty clear that I would not expect Steve Austin wrestling a match at WrestleMania 27. What about a Bill Goldberg? Well, Bill Goldberg has admitted that he's open to the idea, but the ball is basically in WWE's court. And Goldberg is not the easiest person in the world to negotiate with, and obviously he has had some unsavory things to say about the company in recent years. He didn't have the best experience when he worked there. But really, what could Goldberg mean to business? Is Goldberg really going to be... Is he really going to move the needle that much? I mean, he's a big name, and you know, if I'm WWE and I can try to get him, I probably would make a play for him and get him in the Hall of Fame, because they're in Atlanta. you know, they're looking at doing more of a WCW themed Hall of Fame. If they can get Bill Goldberg, that would be huge. I just don't know, you know, what do you do with him? You know, if Undertaker can get himself healed up enough for a match, would Goldberg be willing to take a payday to come in and do a job to the Undertaker? You know, if not, then, well, who do you put him in the ring with? John Cena? You know, Randy Orton? I don't really know that match is all that big of a deal. I mean, I guess Goldberg and Cena could be, but or Goldberg and Edge in a Battle of the Spears. I don't know. I don't know what they do. WrestleMania is looking pretty bleak for them right now. And if Undertaker's not there, as ingrained as this whole streak has become, that is a huge blow for the company if Undertaker doesn't make it to WrestleMania. I think he will. I think if, you know, Undertaker has shown himself to be the kind of guy that, you know, he'll work hurt. And if he can get a couple of months, if he has the surgery and gets a few months to heal up, and even if he's only 70%, I think he'll still be at WrestleMania. So we'll see how that one plays out. CM Punk is done for the rest of the year. He just had surgery this past week on a torn tendon in his buttocks, apparently. The injury happened at the Bragging Rights pay-per-view. There was a spot during the match. I went back and watched it. And it's just, it's the dumbest thing, really, because Edge gave him kind of one of those impaling DDTs. And Punk certainly didn't look as though he took the move wrong or he landed wrong. It was just one of those freak things where if I didn't know the spot where it happened, I never would have been able to point it out. So that's where he suffered. But you can tell after he got DDT'd, he was in a great deal of pain, and he kept clutching his hip. So he tore a tendon. He had surgery on that. That's going to keep him out for about 4 or 5 months. So even CM Punk is going to be touch and go for WrestleMania. Now, this sucks even more to me because clearly they were preparing for a CM Punk-Daniel Bryan feud for the U.S. title, which would have been fucking phenomenal. And I suppose if Punk can you know, recover a little earlier than expected, they can push for Punk and Bryan at WrestleMania, which would be a great WrestleMania match. But again, Punk is going to be touch and go. He may not be able to make WrestleMania either. So just bad news all around for WWE. They went and signed Val Venus to a new contract within the last week or two, and I believe he's on the current European tour that the superstars are on. They're out of the country on a European tour right now. I think they're actually taping, well, yeah, they're obviously going to be taping Raw and SmackDown overseas this week. So they brought in Val Venus. I'm not quite sure if they are going to make him a TV character. Again, in this PG WWE, I don't know that having porn star Val Venus as a TV character is the best idea. But I think it was more a situation where they needed a veteran guy to come in and work with some of the younger talent, and he's certainly a talented guy who never reached his full potential in WWE, so he's well liked. He was with the company for God, probably a good 10 years before they let him go a couple of years ago. So that's the story on Sean Morley back with WWE. One other nugget here of information, and this comes from Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer newsletter, which I saw it this past week. It kind of got me intrigued, and again, I'm not sure if perhaps this would play into WrestleMania, but as the story goes, the management for a pretty big UFC name that nobody knows at this point, nobody knows who this UFC fighter is, but management for this fighter has begun sending feelers to WWE about potentially signing with them when his UFC contract expires. Now, apparently, this person is the last person on Earth, as far as UFC guys go, that you would expect to go into pro wrestling. But it's not someone who would be high on anyone's list of stars you would expect. But that's the story. Nobody seems to know who it is, but they have made overtures to WWE about possibly coming over and signing a contract with them when their UFC contract is up. So who that is, I have no idea. I mean, obviously that would disqualify people like Brock Lesnar and Tito Ortiz, who have done pro wrestling before, and I would absolutely expect them to go back there at some point. So who it could be, I don't know. We'll see if any more comes out about this in the next couple of weeks. But I just found that to be very, very interesting, just because more often than not, you hear about guys kind of working in reverse, in that it's a lot of guys from the pro wrestling side who are interested in going into MMA or somebody like a Kurt Angle, who for years was just one step away from going to UFC, and he kind of jerked Dana White around a lot. Dana thought he was serious, and nobody really ever believed that Kurt would go to UFC, because Kurt Angle and his physical condition at his age, going into UFC would basically be suicide. And here's a situation where you have a UFC guy who is interested in jumping into pro wrestling. It's somewhat unique. You don't really hear about that too much these days. So we'll see. We'll see who it is. So before we get into the mailbag, I've got some WWE jokes here that were sent in to me. Why is unemployment so high in the U.S.? Because Caval does all the jobs. Oh! What did CM Punk tell Adam Copeland when he tried to feel him up? I'm straight, Edge. How many Vince McMahons does it take to screw in a light bulb? None. Light bulb screwed light bulb. Why was the Ultimate Warrior fired from the pet shop? Because he couldn't sell pedigree. A little WrestleMania 12 humor for you. And last but not least, Stephanie McMahon and Triple H are playing with their kids at the playground, and Stephanie tells Hunter, I'm tired of swinging. You give Aurora a push. Aurora, of course, is their daughter. You give her a push. Triple H says, no. Stephanie says, why not? And Triple H goes, because she's too small and doesn't know how to work. And there you go. WWE jokes for you. Now, I did not come up with those jokes. They were sent in to me. I don't remember who sent them in, so I cannot take credit for those jokes, although they were funnier than most of the comedy you'll see on WWE television. So, anyway, thank you to the person who sent those in. The Caval one is unfortunately very true. So, although Caval did have a very, very good match with Jack Swagger on WWE Superstars this past week. So if you didn't see that, again, you can go on YouTube and check that out. It was a really good match. And I still have not tired of the Swagger Soaring Eagle. It still cracks me up every time I see him out there. Now, before I get to your questions, I have to just say something here, because I still, all these weeks later, are getting emails about this. I just want to put this shit to bed once and for all. When I did episode 127 of The Sound Off, that was the special episode where I gave my WWE business rundown and things I would change and do if I were in charge of World Wrestling Entertainment. And when I went through the list of TNA stars that I would deem worthy of being on the WWE roster if I were able to obtain them at some point, I ran off a list of guys that included Kurt Angle and you know, Beer Money and the Machine Guns and Abyss and, you know, Don West and all those guys. And I realized as soon as I was done recording that I left perhaps the most important person of all off that list, and that was AJ Styles. So for people who are writing into me saying, you know, well, how could you leave AJ Styles off the list? He's one of the TNA originals. He's one of the most talented guys in the business. Did you just forget, or would you not want him? Yes, I forgot, okay? I have no problem with AJ Styles being on my roster. In fact, he's the sort of guy that you could build a roster around, a guy like AJ Styles. He's extremely talented. I've said before, go back and listen. This is common knowledge, that TNA's roster from top to bottom is more likely than not the best wrestling roster as far as, you know, national promotions are concerned in this country today. It's even better than WWE's roster. It's just they have too many brain-dead people in power running the company. It's not the fault of the people on the roster. You know, collectively, talent-wise, I don't think anybody can touch them. And AJ Styles is a big part of that. And so anyway, I just wanted to clear that up. It was an oversight on my part. AJ Styles would absolutely have a place in my WWE. He would not be unemployed. He would not starve. And yeah, I just forgot. I fucked up. So there you go. Tony wrote in wanting to know what Shane McMahon has been up to since he left WWE. Last I heard, I believe since about August, Shane has been the CEO of a cable broadband services company called China Broadband. So that's what Shane McMahon has been up to. Taylor writes in, want to give him a shout out. Dear Solid Monster, been listening since episode 92. Big fan, wanted your insight into this. Do you believe that the Edge-Chris Jericho battle that concluded around WrestleMania time could have done better, or that they could not have done anything much more than what they did? Well, Jericho and Edge at WrestleMania was a disappointment. Their match was fine. It wasn't great. It was a pretty good match, but I think what hurt it was the fact that the crowd just was not into it. I mean, there were points during that match where the crowd was just dead. I mean, 70,000 people sitting on their hands. And, you know, part of the problem maybe was Edge playing the role of babyface when he's just such a good heel. You know, Edge is actually all of a sudden been thrust back into the role of babyface all of a sudden, although he kind of, I guess, in a way, straddles the line of face and heel. He never officially turned face. They just kind of said, okay, Edge, you're going to be a babyface from now on. I just think he works so much better as a heel. And when he came back from that injury, he wasn't the same. I mean, when you have an injury like that, when you rupture or tear your Achilles, and you're an older, injury-prone guy as it is, as Edge is, you lose more than just a step or two with an injury like that. You can probably make better do as a wrestler than, say, as a football player, because with an injury like that, you lose a lot of speed. And as a wrestler, you don't have to worry so much about speed as opposed to a baseball player or a football player. But, again, Edge has had a slew of injuries. He's not the performer that he used to be. He's still good, but he's not what he used to be. But I really think being a babyface hurt him. And there really just wasn't that much of an interest in that match as much as I thought there would be. You know, they were supposed to be a tag team for many months and then have a big breakup. I mean, that was what the plan was. And likely it would have culminated in a WrestleMania match anyway. Perhaps that hurt it more than we all expected it to. Perhaps the fact that, you know, Edge got hurt, was off TV for many months, so they did Jarrah's show instead, and then all of a sudden Edge came back, won the Royal Rumble, and they had 2 months of build-up, as opposed to really building this storyline up month after month after month, where they go from being tag team partners to having issues to breaking up. We kind of missed all of that. And maybe that hurt it. I don't know. But the match was missing something to me. And then again, Jericho won clean, which was, I actually appreciated that, because you don't see that very often, where the heel champion goes over clean on the babyface challenger. Now, that never would have happened if that was truly the main event. You know, again, it wasn't the last match on the show, but I actually kind of like that. I think at the pay-per-view after that, it was a triple threat, I believe. I don't think they had another singles match on pay-per-view after that. They kind of just let the feud die. And, yeah, that was a disappointment. I have to admit it was missing something. Rob writes into the Sound Off with an account from WWE's Fan Appreciation Day event back on the 30th of October. This is Dear Solomon, sir. I went to the WWE Fan Appreciation Day in Hartford, and I have to admit that it was far better than anything they've put on TV or pay-per-view lately. From top to bottom, the card was solid. Fink was the ring announcer for the day as well. That alone was worth the price of admission. They had a 24-man battle royal to determine who would face Dolph Ziggler for the Intercontinental Belt, all the way to the main event with John Cena versus Kane. It was a great show. The biggest pop of the night went to John Cena, but Triple H had the longest ovation. That's right, Triple H was at that show, squashing Alberto Del Rio. It was magic, he says. The best match of the night was Randy Orton and Wade Barrett for the WWE Championship. Miz and Daniel Bryan was absolutely solid. They had a diva dance-off and some other stuff. Let's see here. At the end, Triple H, John Cena, Big Show, Orton, and the rest of the crew came out to take pictures with fans at ringside, shake hands, sign autographs for about 15 minutes. It was pretty damn awesome. The best non-pay-per-view I've ever been to. Clearly the best house show ever. Well, I don't know if I'd go that far, but it sounds like Rob had a good time, so congratulations. Matt writes in, Dear Solemn Monster, funny thought, does Kevin Nash have a 90-day non-compete clause? It would be pretty funny if during the Raw Old School show on November 15th, if Bob Backlund was to come out, win some stupid Royal Rumble, and then Kevin Nash came out as Diesel, kicked him and powerbombed him and pinned him, or tossed him over the top rope to win, just like he did back in the day. That would be great. Well, your idea of great is obviously very different from my idea of great. That would not be my first thought if I was booking Raw that night. I'm guessing that if Kevin Nash's contract with TNA truly did expire, as he claims it did back on October 12th, there should not be any sort of non-compete. I could be wrong about that, but when your contract just expires, I don't think you're bound by any sort of clause anymore. I think if he was to be released early from the contract, or fired, or if they gave him a voluntary release earlier than the date of expiration, then he would be bound by some sort of non-compete. At least if you worked for WWE, you would. But if your contract just expires like that and it's over, I don't think he's bound by anything. So I wouldn't put it past them to try to get him for that show. It's possible, I suppose. Although the plan is that Kevin Nash and Sting will eventually come back. So Who knows? Who knows if they're all working us and, you know, Nash and Sting are just going to pop back up on TV in 2 months to confront the Immortals. Think about the Raw Old School show. It's coming up on November 15th, and I'm looking forward to it. It's going to have this whole old school aura going back to 93. They're going to have the original Monday Night Raw introduction. Little, if any, pyro. They'll probably go on the air with those sirens that they used to have for the old Monday Night Raw show. To me, it would be awesome if they had Vince McMahon on commentary standing up there with Jerry Lawler when the show goes on the air. Unfortunately, you can't get Bobby Heenan, but, Macho Man Randy Savage, I'm telling you, if you really wanted to go old school, you'd have Vince McMahon, Lawler, and Savage standing there doing commentary. I know it's not going to happen, but I'm looking forward to it. They've got a bunch of legends already announced that, to be honest with you, I think Dusty Rhodes might be among them. It wouldn't shock me again to see the Million Dollar Man, and that's fine because they're awesome. But we've seen them already. You know, they're going to have Hacksaw Jim Duggan and Sergeant Slaughter, and I think Rowdy Roddy Piper. And again, we've seen these guys so many times that I really hope they have a couple of other guys up their sleeve that they're just keeping secret, because otherwise it's just going to feel like any other special three-hour Raw show that they have, every couple of months. So hopefully they have a little bit more than that plan. But I'm looking forward to it. Anything old school, I'm a sucker for. So that's coming up on November 15th. Jeremy writes in, "Dear Solid Monster, I'm sitting here scratching my head watching Impact, watching Velvet Sky and Sarita plainly talking to each other throughout their match. Tommy Dreamer telling RVD that Raven wasn't there, and then magically he shows up after RVD's match. Now the accusation of Dreamer being Bischoff's boy. Anyone smell a relit candle of Tatanka and Lex Luger with the Million Dollar Corporation angle?" Well, hey. That was actually a pretty good angle there. Don't be knocking that. This one comes from Michael. "Is it just me, or do you think that it's messed up how fans are trashing WWE for banning things like chair shots to the head? While I don't agree with every ban WWE has made, such as stopping a match because a wrestler got busted open, I do think some of them are beneficial. The daily bumps wrestlers take can be dangerous enough, and chair shots to the head only add to health problems. On a similar note, do you think TNA's ban on unprotected chair shots is too little? Seems that while they made slight progress in one area, they failed to do anything to really benefit the health of their wrestlers. For example, barbed wire matches, Matt Morgan being choked with a chain, etc. What are your thoughts?" Well, first of all, I don't know who these fans are that you're finding that are trashing WWE's ban on chair shots to the head. I haven't heard too many people complaining about that. And, you know, it's interesting. As far as what I think about that, WWE bans a lot of things that kind of piss me off. You know, it's bad enough they take signs away from people at the arena when they're not even really all that profane. And I agree, the whole blood ban is the way they implemented it anyway. Because I'm not opposed to cutting back on the act of people slicing their heads open, which I think is a barbaric way of doing things. And I certainly, if I were asked to do that on an every week basis, you know, to the point where, you know, when I'm 40 years old, I'm going to have a forehead that looks like Dusty Rhodes or Abdullah the Butcher, I wouldn't do it. Because that's fucking disgusting. But, you know, I agree that stopping a match because a wrestler got busted open, especially if the cut isn't all that serious, is completely ridiculous. What's interesting is Lance Storm made a comment, of all people. Lance Storm, of course, has wrestled for all the major promotions. He wrestled for, you know, Smoky Mountain Wrestling even back in the day. ECW, WCW, WWE. Runs his own school now up in Calgary. And he did an interview recently and made a comment that, not that he doesn't support the ban of chair shots to the head, because in reality, you really don't need to be swinging weapons and metal objects at people's heads. You know, it's a positive if you ban that from happening. But in reality, he's not sure that he would ban that outright so much as just educate people as to the right way to do it. Because there's a safe way if you in the middle of a match, if you want to have somebody swing a chair at somebody's head, there's a safe way to do it. Where you put your hands up, you know, where the chair doesn't even come close to hitting the person in the head, but it looks good. There's a safe way to do it. The problem is, you know, you got a lot of young guys on the roster who don't necessarily know the safest ways to do some of these moves. I mean, look what happened a couple of weeks ago on Impact. when Jeff Hardy cracked Mr. Anderson in the back with a chair. Now, that was unintentional. He did not intend to hit him in the back of the head and bust him open and gave him a legitimate concussion that fucked up their pay-per-view plans. But had he executed that move correctly and safely, it wouldn't have been an issue. So, if you can educate people as to the right way to do these fucking moves, you don't have to ban everything. Or you can just say, fuck it, it's not worth the risk, let's just ban shit like chair shots to the head, which is fine. I don't really have a problem with that. Now, you mentioned TNA's ban of unprotected chair shots to the head. This comes from an interview that Mr. Anderson did this past week, that he made mention of the fact that TNA has now banned unprotected chair shots to the head. He says agents will now tell you before you go out for a match, please, please, please tell me that you're not going to use a chair and hit somebody in the head with it. Okay, he went on and on about this, and he's touting how TNA now won't stand for it. There's a ban on it. We've not heard word one from TNA or anybody in TNA that this is true. This all comes from an interview that Mr. Anderson did. Mind you, this is the same Mr. Anderson who, when he worked for WWE and Chris Benoit killed his family, that they put out there for interviews on Fox News and other media outlets and made a complete fucking ass out of himself. You know, he calls himself an asshole. That's part of his character in TNA. The guy's a legitimate asshole here. He would go out and just say the stupidest fucking things in these interviews. And he would make the company look so bad. And don't think that didn't play into him getting released later on. When they finally, it was just one thing in a series of things where the company basically said, you know, we don't need this shit anymore. And Vince McMahon said, fuck it, get rid of him. I don't want him in my company anymore. He didn't do himself any favors in 07 by going out there and blatantly lying. I mean, I don't remember if it was with Greta Van Susteren or who the anchor was, but he was on Fox News doing an interview. And again, he would just lie. You know, he would say that he didn't do steroids and he didn't get involved with shit like that, only, of course, to later on get busted in what I believe was the Signature Pharmacy scandal. So, you know, that was one lie. And then he would say other stupid stuff that even people in WWE would be like, what the fuck is this guy saying? So I don't put a lot of stock in what Mr. Anderson has to say. Until I hear it from somebody else in TNA or I see it for myself on television, I cannot picture TNA and people like Abyss and all of that all of a sudden not using chair shots to the head. And again, it's fine if they're going to do it, but they're going to take better precautions to protect themselves and put their hands up. Even somebody like RVD a couple of weeks ago took a chair shot to the head that was pretty sick and didn't put his hands up. That's pretty fucking stupid. And if they didn't outright ban them, but they're going to at least make an effort to take them a little bit safer, that's fine. But do I believe everything that comes out of Mr. Anderson's mouth? I wouldn't believe Mr. Anderson if he told me that 2 + 2 = 4. So I'm reserving judgment on that until I see it for myself on TV or I hear it from somebody else that has a little more credibility than Mr. fucking Anderson. All right, let's take a couple more here. This question comes from David. Dear Solomonster, I always felt that there was so much hype to Ultimo Dragon's debut in WWE with them constantly citing his success and how he held several championships at once. Yet he never held a single title in WWE or had much success to speak of. I know WWE has a tendency to not capitalize on those with immense talent. Watching Ultimo Dragon flounder around on SmackDown for months was the first time I noticed this. Do you have any idea why he failed as much as he did? I always felt there had to have been a reason or two why he did not do as well in WWE. I think it just had more to do with the fact that Vince McMahon, he was a smaller guy. To Vince McMahon, he didn't, you know, he wasn't a massively large guy, and more so back, more so back then than even now. Again, Vince McMahon always has had a hard on for big guys. Ultimo Dragon was not a big guy. He was also part of the whole cruiserweight deal that they had on SmackDown, and Vince McMahon has never ever put any sort of legitimate emphasis on cruiserweights in his company. So that probably had more to do with it than anything else. I don't think there was any sort of heat specifically on Ultimo Dragon. But I also wonder about the botched surgery that he had, because I remember when he was in WCW, and it would have been towards the end, if not at the very end of his WCW run, he suffered some sort of injury. I think it was a wrist injury, I think it was, or some sort of arm injury. And he had surgery, and the surgery was botched. I think he suffered nerve damage. and they thought that his career was pretty much done at that point. Of course, he did come back. He wrestled in Japan. He wrestled in WWE, and I think he still wrestles today. But I do wonder if that had anything to do with it as well. I mean, I still remember him being a very good performer, but maybe not as good, because he was still suffering some lingering effects from that surgery. I could be wrong about that, but I think the biggest reason is just that he wasn't a big guy. He was a cruiserweight guy. They knew he had a particular role to fill on SmackDown. Vince did not look at him as a guy that was going to be the Intercontinental Champion or a world champion like a Rey Mysterio, because there's only one Rey Mysterio, and that was it. He just didn't get the opportunity that he should have. And was he a wasted talent? Absolutely. But I don't think there was any other reason, any other sinister reason he didn't get over. I think that was pretty much the deal there. At the end of David's email here, he put a little PS note. He says, my birthday is coming up on November 10th, turning 24. Would you mind sharing one of your favorite birthday gifts or memories? Well, first of all, happy early birthday. And I'm kind of drawing a blank right now. I mean, I've had some good birthdays, but nothing that stands out terribly. But since this is mostly a wrestling podcast, I guess I'll share a wrestling memory. Back in 1998, when I turned... just kidding. Back in 1998, it was actually kind of a gift to myself, because I knew that Raw was coming locally to the Nassau Coliseum. And I had only been to one Raw show before that. It was actually that summer, my very first Raw. It was in a luxury box at the old Meadowlands. And it was a great show, and I knew Raw was coming back to town, and I said, I want to go. So I bought myself a ticket and went with some friends. This was in October. This was about a week after my birthday. Went to Raw. This was the show where, if you remember, the Big Boss Man officially came back to WWE. This was his big comeback when he was, you know, donning the black, the flak jacket and all that stuff. This was Boss Man's first time back in WWE since, like, 93. And it was the same show where Vince McMahon at one point, I think, came out on stage with a bunch of guard dogs to kind of protect him from Steve Austin, who was in the ring. And Boss Man came back at the end of the night. He interfered in a match. He was wearing, I think, a hood, and took the hood off, and people knew who he was. I just remember, you know, people... Again, the internet then compared to now was... The internet wrestling community was still in its infancy compared to what it is today, but people knew. I mean, people knew that Boss Man was coming back. I would look around the arena. There's a guy right behind me who had one of those old-school blue Big Boss Man Hasbro action figures taped to a giant sign that said, "Welcome back, Boss Man." So I kind of knew at that point that we might be seeing something special before the night was over, and we did. And it was actually a fun show. That might have been the same show that the finals, I think that was the finals of the Intercontinental title tournament, because Triple H, you may remember, had beaten The Rock at SummerSlam in that great ladder match and became the Intercontinental champion. He had suffered a knee injury during that match and needed surgery, so he had to forfeit the belt. And I think what happened was they put the belt up in a tournament, and that might have been the night on Raw that they had the finals between Ken Shamrock and X-Pac, and I think Ken Shamrock actually won the Intercontinental title that night. That would have been October 12th, 1998, if my memory serves me correctly. So that's one fun birthday memory. Yeah, I'm reading through our buddy Mr. Mishra's impact report that he sent in this week, and I apologize for not going through the whole thing, but I'm up to the part here where he's talking about some 2-minute match with a fuck finish between Abyss and the Pope, and Abyss pulling fans out of the crowd and beating up the fans, which I guess is leading to a lumberjack match at the pay-per-view this weekend where the fans will be at ringside as lumberjacks. This just sounds incredibly stupid to me. By the way, speaking of stupid, and again, it's a little too early still, I would say, to completely judge, just to be fair. But again, TNA took their biggest babyface star in Jeff Hardy. Just the same Jeff Hardy who in 2009 was like the most searched wrestler on Google and was WWE's biggest babyface draw, you know, maybe one notch below John Cena. But in many cases, he was even above John Cena. That's how popular he was. And TNA had this guy, and they turn him heel. It's like Bash at the Beach 96 all over again. And Eric Bischoff, I think, did an interview this past week and talked about the fact that Jeff Hardy wasn't even their first choice. You know, it was a situation where Vince Russo is the one who made the suggestion that they go with Jeff Hardy as the person to turn heel at Bound for Glory. Why am I not surprised by that? Because, again, it's shocking. It's not something people would expect. It's a swerve. So they go with Jeff Hardy, and it certainly was somewhat shocking. I'll give them that. But the house show numbers for TNA, which, again, were never exactly stellar to begin with, but the already bad house show numbers for TNA, and again, you can make the argument that they were drawing people largely in part because of Jeff Hardy. He was probably the biggest draw they had in that entire company. Their numbers have fallen off a fucking cliff in the last, like, 2 weeks, as far as the number of people coming out for these house shows. So let's say that TNA would ordinarily have an average crowd of, like, 600 people, which is already bad enough. Now it's down to, like, 300 people in certain places. Way to go, TNA. Way to go. Good move. Lee writes into the podcast, one of our fans from the very beginning, episode one. What were some of your sexiest moments in women's wrestling? Kind of an odd question, but I don't know, I'm rather partial to Miss Kitty giving Terry a stink face at SummerSlam 2000, but honestly, the one segment that stands out to me, and I don't know why, but it does. It's just a random throwaway segment from an episode of SmackDown. This would have been back probably in 2002. And it involved Billy and Chuck and Stacy Keibler and Tori Wilson. And it was some sort of like posing contest, you know, and they have that generic kind of Divas music that they used. I really like the music they used during this segment. And Jerry Lawler was the host. So again, this would have been 01, 02. And I don't remember what Billy and Chuck did. I really don't care. But when it came to Stacy and Tori, they were doing a series of three different poses. And the final pose, if I remember correctly, was Tori Wilson laying on the mat, giving the come hither hand motion to Stacy. And Stacy Keibler crawling over on top of Tori Wilson. That was an incredible moment right there. And I'll even say when Vince McMahon hired Stacy Keibler to be his personal assistant, if you remember that segment where Stacy basically came out, Vince McMahon was interviewing candidates for the position, and Stacy came out and kicked the last person out, and she said, "Listen, Vince, I'm going to give you a reason, you know, why you should hire me," and she kind of threw everything off the desk and climbed up on top of the desk and was doing a dance for Vince, and Vince was just went out of his skin and fell backwards out of his chair, and you know, Stacy basically, the last part of the segment was Vince got back in his chair, Stacy put each one of her legs and rested them on each one of Vince's shoulders, giving him quite the view, I must say. That was a pretty incredible segment too. So if I had to pick sexy moments involving sexy female performers in WWE, those two would come to mind. Ironically, they both involve Stacy Keibler. So there you go. Chris writes in, "Dear Solomonster, listener since around episode 80-ish, writing from LA. My first question was, I never figured out during the 2000 Royal Rumble when The Rock and The Big Show eliminated each other. Was that planned, or was there originally only supposed to be one blatant winner?" Basically, The Rock fucked up. When The Rock went over the top rope, as the replay later showed, both feet, in fact, I believe, touched the floor. His feet were not supposed to touch the floor. He was supposed to go over but hang on and pull himself back in, which he did, but in reality, his feet hit the floor, and the people at ringside saw that. So I think what happened was they saw they had the footage of it, and they just decided to kind of play off of it. But that was not the intended finish. There was never supposed to be any dispute as far as who won that Rumble. Second question, do you think if TNA added The Rock to their roster that would boost them significantly? Well, first of all, that's not going to happen. But if it were to happen, of course, it would give them a huge boost, because not even that The Rock is a former WWE champion, but The Rock has become a bona fide Hollywood megastar. And having any Hollywood megastar that people are going to recognize on your TV show is going to help. So, and of course, we all know The Rock is easily the most charismatic guy to ever grace a wrestling ring. I mean, you can make the argument he is the most charismatic. Hulk Hogan made a career out of being charismatic, so who's the more charismatic? You can debate that. Is it Hogan? Is it Rock? He certainly is way up there. But at the end of the day, TNA would find a way to fuck it up. TNA does not know how to properly run a wrestling company. Again, you can give them all the talent in the world. It doesn't matter. If you don't know what to do with that talent, then it's a moot point. So, anyway. P.S., your Michael Jackson rant, that was episode 75, was way too crazy but entertaining. I've listened to it 3 times already. Well, it was something that had to be said at the time, and it just kind of lives on in infamy now when people listen back to that episode. I just heard that Michael Jackson actually has a new record coming out, I think in the next couple of weeks, I think next month maybe. So, yes, they continue to prostitute the legacy of Michael Jackson. Apparently, I don't know if it's the album or there was some sort of Oprah. Again, I follow this stuff loosely, but apparently there was some sort of deal where Oprah was interviewing Michael Jackson's children, and the family was not very happy with the fact that, you know, like the day before, the show that Oprah decided to have was a show about, like, men who molest children or something like that. But again, shocking, I know, that somebody like Oprah Winfrey would go the tabloid route on her TV show. But anyway, yeah, I think I spoke my piece on Michael Jackson, and I don't want to get myself into any more trouble, so I'm just going to leave it at that. And lastly here, Steve writes in, I was watching Raw using YouTube. When Randy Orton was whipped into the steel steps, it looked like he arched his back in pain on Monday night before he grabbed his shoulder. Now, maybe I didn't look at it right, or maybe Orton screwed that up by playing at his back before clutching his arm. What do you think about this, as I would like to get your opinion on it? Well, until you mentioned that, I had forgotten. I mean, I noticed it when I watched the match on Monday night, and I didn't pay any attention to it, because it's called selling. See, when you get whipped into the steel steps, if you go shoulder first, you're going to clutch your shoulder. But perhaps he hurt his back on the same move. It's not unheard of that if somebody gets whipped into the corner or whipped into the steel steps, that you could hurt your arm, you could hurt your neck, you could hurt your back. It's called selling. It's what Randy Orton does. So, there you go. I wouldn't overanalyze something like that too much. So that's going to do it for the mailbag this week. A lot of good questions. Keep them coming. TheSolomonster@gmail.com. That's the email address to send questions to for this podcast. Again, if you have questions for the main page SE Scoops mailbag, of which there was none this week, but it will be back next week, you could send that into SEScoops@gmail.com. But anything from me or this podcast has to go to TheSolomonster@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Solomonster. And friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSolomonster. If you see the Solomonster Sounds Off logo, you know that it is the official Facebook profile. Friend me on there. Follow me on Twitter because, again, possibly this week, I haven't decided yet, but sometime soon we'll be doing another Twitter-only mailbag or Facebook-only mailbag. And we do those every now and then. So you have to be on there in order to know when it's happening. And it doesn't cost you a dime. So get on there. And, of course, you could subscribe to this podcast, as you have been able to do for the past 3 years, on iTunes. It is free. Whenever there's a new episode that goes up, whatever day it may be, you will be the first to know about it. You don't have to do shit. It will automatically download, and you can listen to the Sound Off over and over and over again. And let me just say here to conclude this week's show, three-year anniversary show, I am very grateful for everybody who takes the time to download the podcast. You know, some people are just casual listeners, which is great. Some people are just obsessed with the Sound Off, which is good, you know, as long as it's a healthy obsession. But people, you know, they download the show, they build their whole week around it in some cases, and you know, sometimes they'll disagree with me, a lot of times they will agree with me. Whatever your reasons are for listening to the show, as long as you're listening, I don't care. As long as you're getting something out of it, if you find it entertaining, if you find it informative, if you only listen to half of it and not the other half, whatever it may be, I'm just very grateful that people take the time to listen to what I have to say. And, you know, it's been 3 years. It doesn't feel like it, but it's been 3 years. I've enjoyed the hell out of doing the podcast. And like I said before, here's to another 3 years and beyond. Keep supporting the website. I want to thank Webmaster Mike one more time for giving me the platform here to do this show. I think it's become a big part of the website. I'd like to think that it's had a part in its growth as SE Scoops continues to get bigger and bigger each week. So continue to tell your friends, your family, anybody who you may think may have an interest in this, even if they're not a wrestling fan, I think they may get a kick out of listening to the show. We're always looking for new listeners here, so keep spreading the good word of the Sound Off. And again, thanks to everybody for making this possible. I really appreciate it. All 133 episodes thus far have been great, some more than others, but it's been a blast, and I look forward to doing many more, including 134 next week. Same place, right here on sescoops.com. Thanks to all of you.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
I am AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solar Monster Sounds Off on sescoops.com.